Hello and welcome to another episode of Debbie Mond Paranormal Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Tori, and tonight we are going to be talking about one of the most haunted houses in America. This house is known as the Bel Air House. So join me tonight, won't you, as we dive in deep into the dark mysteries that lurk behind each shadowy corner of Ohio's most haunted house. Before we begin, I just want to say thank you guys so much for joining me for each and every episode. And may I just make one brief announcement before we dive into tonight's episode. Tonight's episode will be the last new episode for this season, Season 5 of Debbie Mond Paranormal. Debbie Mond Paranormal Podcast will return in about 2 weeks with an all-new season and all-new episodes. So stay tuned for that. And thank you guys so much for allowing me to have 5 seasons available for Debbie Mond Paranormal Podcast. It really is a pleasure sharing all these spooky facts and ghost stories with y'all that I found interesting, and I hope you guys found interesting as well. So, with that being said, let's enjoy the last episode of the season, shall we, before we make our brief goodbyes. And I also want to ask one question. Have you guys ever heard of the Bel Air House? Have you heard the history? Or maybe you're like me and you never heard anything about this place, but just one day, and by one day I mean just last Monday actually, this past Monday, you just heard about Bel Air and you're like, whoa, where is that place? Actually, I think I heard about Bel Air through a YouTuber that has the name of, his username is Exploring with Josh. If you guys have ever heard of Exploring with Josh, let me know. Sometimes I watch him and he does kind of similar things that we do here. He doesn't really exclusively do paranormal things, but he does explore areas that are abandoned and decrepit and may have a paranormal background. So if you guys are interested in that, please check them out. You could fall down a rabbit hole like I usually do. So let's get into this crazy story. And just between you and me, I think they should make a movie based on the Bel Air House. That's how like intricate and fascinating this ghost story is. So without any further ado, let me stop rambling and we'll get on to the ghostly facts behind Bel Air. Hello there, and welcome to Debbie Mond Paranormal Podcast. I'm Tori from Debbie Mond Paranormal on Facebook.com, and if you're new here, I welcome you with big open arms. If you guys like or love anything paranormal, supernatural, or all things spooky, you're more than welcome here. On both the podcast and the Facebook group, the private Facebook group, you will find that we cover all things paranormal or supernatural. This includes ghost stories, ghost hauntings, different types of ghosts. We also cover witches, witchcraft, vampirism, werewolves, aliens, Bigfoot. If it's paranormal, if it's supernatural, we've got it. We're not afraid to cover all things in various topics. But tonight, we're here to talk about the Bel Air House haunting. Now, have you guys ever heard of the Bel Air House in Bel Air, Ohio. Type back a comment when you are able to listen to this podcast and leave it down below. But if you guys are from that area, don't be afraid to tell me any stories or any experiences that you guys may have had yourselves, or maybe someone you know has had these experiences. But anyway, if you're like me and you never heard of this house, you are in for quite a treat. Now, the Bel-Air House is located on 1699 Belmont Street in Bel-Air, Ohio. The house is seemingly so innocent looking. It's a 5-bedroom, 1-bathroom house that is 2,500 square feet. It sits on just under 1 acre of land, and it was built in 1904, or as some sources say, 1847. The house is located near the bank of the Ohio River, which is also the location of the famous or the infamous French and Indian War from 1754 to 1763. The house is believed to sit on a ley line, which is thought to bring paranormal energy in and out of the home. The house is thought to be haunted due to the fact that there was an explosion in the Ohio Valley coal mine in 1893. 42 lives were lost, and it took days to recover the bodies. Furthermore, the coal mine, in fact, all the coal mines in that area were owned by the same man, a man by the name of Jacob Hetherington. Now, Jacob Hetherington was a humble guy with a decent reputation in the community. Even though Jacob owned all the mines, he was also down in the mines working alongside his men with his best friend, Jack. But Jack wasn't a human, he was actually a mule. So, what we've already learned about Jacob Hetherington is that he was actually a pretty good guy so far. I mean, usually when we hear about these ghost stories and we talk about a coal magnate, he usually isn't such a great guy. Usually they rule their families with an iron fist, but not this guy. Especially for that time, he was actually quite the, decent guy, which is quite refreshing. It makes this story all the sadder, to be honest with you. And it is quite the story. I've got to say, before we get even more in depth into the history and the story of the haunting, it may remind you of the 2015 film Crimson Peak. And once we get, through the whole story, I want you guys to keep that in mind if you guys saw that, and maybe you'll see what I'm talking about. So, anyway, back to Jacob Hetherington and his best friend Jack, who was a mule. Now, Jack the Mule is said to inspire the old nursery rhyme, The House That Jack Built. It's actually about the mule that helped Jacob expand his coal mines and build his mansion. When Jacob met his wife, Eliza, she had seen a star fall from the sky. Now, this was a little bit before she actually met Jacob, but one night she saw a star fall from the sky, and she was curious where the star had landed, so she decided to follow in the direction of which the star had fallen. She walked all the way to Davis Farm and asked the Davis family if any of them had seen the star. And to this, Mrs. Davis told her that she did indeed see the fallen star. And she told Eliza that she had to immediately fall to her knees and pray to God. Seeing a falling star is a bad omen. But nevertheless, Eliza then continued to walk for miles in the direction of this falling star, which led her to the bank of the Ohio River. Along the bank of the Ohio River, she met Jacob Hetherington. Jacob was on his own in the area since his own parents left him behind to go work in the coal mines for Captain Fink. Now, Captain Fink had also rented Jacob a coal bank, and he also later sold him 8 acres of land. But by the time Jacob had actually met Eliza, he had already bought 61 half-acres of land from Paxton in Wheeling, and then he bought another 14 half-acres from Captain Fink. Jacob was one of the biggest taxpayers in Belmont County. All in all, he owned about a total of 667 acres of land for farming and coal, and he also bought 110 acres of woodland. The original founder and owner of Bel Air was Jacob Davis, who named the town after the place his mother was born in Maryland. Jacob Davis was a successful businessman who was also an abolitionist. He also worked with Reverend Truman of Bel Air United Methodist to free runaway slaves, who also worked with Jacob Hetherington and Captain Frank. The trio was pretty close-knit. They had pretty close ties. All good friends and believed in a good cause. After the explosion of the coal mine was to be abandoned in 1893 as the flames of the fire could not be extinguished, and operators had already spent $8,000 trying to do so. The explosion happened in Coal Mine 1, and ironically enough, Bel Air House sits right on top of Coal Mine Number 1. The Haunting of Bel Air House. In 1847, Jacob Hetherington built Bel Air in the vicinity of the Shawnee Native American burial caves. The burial caves are behind the house, but in front of the house sits the Ohio River. This is interesting because rushing, flowing water, such as that in a river, could create a type of portal due to its magnetic pull. The water creates a powerhouse of energy spirits need to be able to cross from the earthbound realm and their own spiritual realm. The area behind the Bel Air House is known as the Native American Interment Area. The Native Americans would bury their dead chieftains, shamans, healers, and witch doctors in these caves. They apparently would hold ceremonies in this area and even practice magic. In the 1754 French and Indian Wars, it ravaged the Bel Air town and blood-soaked the soil, and that's what keeps the residual supernatural energy there for many years, and probably many years to come still. Another very interesting little tidbit that is about Bel Air is that if we were to look up into the sky at nighttime, we would be able to see a planetary alignment of Mercury, Mars, Saturn, Venus, Jupiter, and other constellations. And this potentially made this location ideal for performing ceremonies. When Jacob Hetherington died, he left all of the land and his home to his son and daughter. Never mind that part. When Jacob Hetherington died, he left his business to his son, Alex. And the mining business was also assisted by Alex's daughter, and her name was Lade. Now, unfortunately, the mining business began to fail when Alex began seeing things that weren't there. He saw demonic entities that he claimed were trying to kill him, and he even began to take epileptic seizures. Back in the day, people believed that he was haunted and cursed by the coal mine incident. Some believed that he was actually possessed by delusional entities, and these entities still seem to affect paranormal researchers when they visit the house to this day. Sadly, Alex was committed to an insane asylum, and shortly after this, his daughter, Lade, took over the business. But not long before her own death. Lady died in the dining room, and her brother, Edwin, left the military when she was still alive to be closer to her. As we mentioned before, Edwin was completely grief-stricken when he found out that his beloved sister had died. He became absolutely obsessed with the thought of communication with the other side, especially with speaking to his deceased sister. He studied the art of communication with the dead and occultism while living alone in the Bel Air house. He wanted to advance his studies and become a better psychic. He brought in all different mediums from all corners of the world in efforts to try to help him contact Eliza Lade from the other side, from the realm of the dead. As most of us know, some spiritualists or mediums were not or are not always honest in their capabilities, and sad to say, they took his money, they lied to his face, and ultimately led him to mistakenly open portals that invited dark spirits into the house. Even paranormal experts believe that as many as 11 portals were opened in the home. Edwin was fascinated by the afterlife and speaking with the dead, and this led to his potential possession. But what do you think he even encountered or witnessed in his many years living alone in the Bel Air house? Also, it's said that Eliza died in the house from a heart attack. She died in the dining room. It's believed that Edwin's practice in occultism, his amateur practice as an occultist, opened up as much as we mentioned 11 portals. And these portals attracted malicious spirits to infest the house and haunt it. Now, in today's day and age, these 11 portals, even paranormal researchers and investigators and experts have even tried to close these portals, but they just won't stay closed. They absolutely refuse. Now, Lade and Edwin were known to have servants in the house, and most of them were named Mary. One of the servants had a child in the house, and this child, according to local legend and rumor, this child had a bloodline that was needed to keep an entity inside the Bel Air home strong, or at least strong enough to do Lade's bidding. According to village rumors at the time, the child of the servants was lured to a window in the attic, where the child had jumped to his death. He plunged to his death. It's rumored that this child was fathered by Edwin when he had a romantic relationship, or a fling, if you will, with one of the servants. Interestingly enough, some researchers have a hunch that Edwin and Lade's relationship may have been incestuous, and neither of the siblings had ever gotten married. Some speculate that the death of the servant's child was perpetrated by the ghost of a jealous, furious Lade. Furthermore, after Lade's death, Edwin's remaining family members tried to take or steal even the house from Edwin, and that's when the house itself left the Hetherington name forever. So before we go any farther, I just want to clarify a few bits here. So when Jacob Hetherington died, he left the land and the business to his son, Alex Hetherington, who had a daughter named Lade and her brother, who was named Edwin. And Lade would help assist her father with the mining business. But as we said before, when her father was committed to an insane asylum when he started seeing demonic entities, she, kind of ruled the mining business. And then in about 1900, her brother, Edwin, moved back home to be with her. And after she died in the house, after Lade died at age about 46, I want to say, her brother Edwin became obsessed with contacting her on the other side. I mean, he did everything he could to try to contact her. And that brings us to Edwin opening 11 portals to the other side and potentially inviting malicious spirits into his home, haunting his home. So I just wanted to just clarify some tidbits here. Also, Alex's commitment papers and his whole case study was not open to the public. So it wasn't a whole, it wasn't in the public's eye. That would cause a scandal, especially back in those days. So I hope that kind of clarifies everything up. And also, back to what I said before about the story almost being like the storyline in that movie called Crimson Peak. If you guys haven't seen that movie, check it out. It's one of my favorite films. But honestly, the relationship, or as it seems like, the relationship between Edwin and Lade seems so familiar and so similar to the relationship between Lucille and Thomas Sharp. I mean, it's crazy. And I mean, they both lived atop some type of mine. I mean, in Crimson Peak, it was a clay mine, but in the Bel-Air house, it was a coal mine. It was just interesting. And at first, I was like, what movie does this story remind me of? And at first, I thought about The Fall of the Usher House by Edgar Allan Poe. But then I thought, just a little bit. But it also reminds me of Crimson Peak. So, anyway, before I bore you guys too much with that stuff, let's get on with the spooky facts and spooky ghost stories. Then, in 1940, in March, another explosion happened, this time killing 50 men and trapping about 180. The mine was referred to as the Willow Grove Mine, and it was about 20 minutes from Bel-Air. Many members of the community tried to save the men, but the accident left more than 100 men severely injured or burned. The rescue attempt lasted for several days, but to no avail, and it's believed that this explosion further contributed to the haunting of Bel-Air House. So, like I said before, y'all, I mean, seemingly looking at this house, you would not think that there is so much history, so much malicious infestation of spirits located in this house. I mean, it is just wild. And today, I mean, right now, actually, I'm gonna take you guys to today's age in the hauntings. The Bel-Air House has its reputation of being haunted, notoriously haunted, for many years. When it sat empty and abandoned, the locals would report seeing strange apparitions peering out of windows and moving around inside the house when it was securely locked up tight. Now, many people blamed the activity on trespassers, but when Kristen Lee and her family moved into the house, that all seemed to change, and for the worst. Kristen very quickly realized that all these strange reports from the neighbors and her own experiences were not the work of neighborhood kids or some pranksters looking for a good time or a good thrill. After she moved her family to Bel-Air, They were plagued with bad luck and violent physical attacks. They are also plagued with oppressive energies. The dog was even thrown against a wall by an unseen entity, and Kristen was held in bed by something. And that was the last straw for Kristen. She decided to rent out the house to families who knew nothing of the hauntings and the violent attacks that went on in the house. This happened when they were unable to, you know, just give up and move out of the place. Sadly, that wasn't a possibility for them. And for years, they were stuck in that house. The tenants, however, never stayed for more than a few months before moving out. And even after trying to sell the house to the village for only $1, with the mortgage paid off and everything, no one made an offer. It was deemed unsafe. And everybody's heard stories about that house. Everybody was afraid. And that's when Kristen decided to open the house for paranormal research and investigations. Additionally, Kristen herself saw a gray apparition lean over her as she lay down on the couch in her home. She was naturally frightened, and she demanded to see who the man was. She demanded for the apparition to tell her who he was, but he did not answer and simply walked away while fading away into thin air. Needless to say, the whole family was desperately wanted out. And so when they opened the doors to paranormal research and investigations, people have been attacked and even pushed downstairs. One night during an investigation, a staff member was carrying an armload full of equipment downstairs as he felt something tug his clothing, which made him lose his balance, and his left arm went through a window on the second story. Unexplained footsteps, phantom voices, and strange rapping noises can be heard. Also, doors that shut and open by themselves are just some of the strange paranormal happenings of Bel Air. The house is said to be so haunted that the ghostly activity even affects neighboring houses. The Bel Air house is so infested with spirits that it was deemed unsafe to live in. Among the ghosts that live in the house, one of them is believed to be the original Jacob Hetherington, and another is something way darker. This entity calls itself Emily. It appears as a little girl, but she actually is thought to be a malicious spirit, although the spirit of Emily, and I put Emily in quotation marks, even scared the Lee family so bad that they ran to the other side of town. However, among some of the nasty mean ghosts, there are some friendly spirits residing in the Bel Air home who just want to tell their story. Then again, on the other hand, during an investigation, Kristen heard a demonic growl. So, you know. If you do decide to visit Bel Air House in the future, proceed with caution. Some things are not what they seem. And also, I believe that the Bel Air House is closed to the public, at least, due to COVID restrictions. But hey, maybe someday in the future, if you want to, I mean, you can go and visit the house and you can decide for yourself what you think resides in that home. And that just about does it for the story of the haunting of the Bel Air House in Bel Air, Ohio. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. I've got to say, that's probably one of my favorite haunted houses to learn about. So I hope you guys liked that one as much as I did. I thought that was really interesting. The whole story was really good. And as I said before, they should make a movie about that. That would be really unique. And I just want to mention one thing. If you guys remember how I said Edwin Hetherington lost his home to other family members, maybe perhaps how that was possible was due to the fact that it's not really clear who mothered Edwin and Laid. We knew that Alex Hetherington was their father, but we don't know for sure who their mother was. So back in those days, you could lose a lot, or at least everything, if you were accused of being illegitimate. So that could have been one of the contributing factors into stealing his home from him. That's just a thought that cropped into my mind, but I could be wrong. I probably am wrong, but, you know, maybe. So that does it for tonight's segment. I will see you guys for some quick facts, and then we will do the outro. And I want to thank you guys so much for joining me for tonight's episode. Right now I'm going to take you guys to just a few quick little spooky spots that I found surfing the web. And our first spot here is the Burg Eltz Castle in Germany. Now Burg Eltz Castle dates back to 1157. And the list of myths surrounding the castle is nearly as long as it's been around. Of the few rooms in the castle open to tourists, supposedly one of the most haunted is the bedroom of Countess Agnes. Her bed and her breastplate and battle axe remain in the room, and legend has it that she died defending the castle from an undesirable suitor, and therefore still haunts the German castle. Found between the towns of Koblenz and Trier today. Our next little spot here is in the Czech Republic. This is a castle that I may have mentioned earlier. This is the Huska Castle, and it's located about an hour north of Prague. Huska Castle has no fortifications and no kitchen. It has no occupants when it was built. It does, however, have something within its walls that no other castle in the world has. It has a large hole in the ground that many considered to be the gateway to hell. Huska was strategically built over the hole, which is fabled to be a bottomless hole, to seal up the gateway and keep demonic creatures from entering the world. Our world. The demons are said to be trapped in the walls of the lower level. Now, according to legend, before sealing it off completely, nearby prisoners were granted pardons if they would agree to be lowered into the hole by a rope and report back what they saw. When the first prisoner was lowered, he started screaming after a few seconds. When he was raised back up, the story goes that he had appeared to aged 30 years. I mean, dang, what did he see? And in America, in Alaska, you may have heard of this saloon. This is called the Red Onion Saloon. I know that Ghost Adventures visited here in one of their episodes, but the Red Onion Saloon was established in 1898. In Skagway, and it was a popular brothel during the Klondike Gold Rush, and today it's said to be haunted by one of the women who worked there. Her name was Lydia. The resident ghost has also reportedly been spotted running down a hall into a room once occupied by the madam. Others claim to have smelled her perfume or experienced extreme cold spots. Also in the United States, we have the Crescent Hotel in Arkansas, Located in Eureka Springs, the Crescent Hotel was one of America's most luxurious resorts when it opened in 1886, but it closed in the 1930s due to tough economic times. And in 1937, it was purchased by Norman Baker and converted the hotel to Baker's Cancer Curing Hospital. Now, Baker had no medical training, and his supposedly groundbreaking cancer treatments were in fact a scam. Today, the hotel has been restored to its natural, original grandeur, but Baker's patients and other spirits are still said to haunt the property. Common ghost sightings include Theodora, who was a patient who fumbles for her keys outside of room 419, and Michael, who was an Irish stonemason who fell to his death while building the hotel. And our last location is in Connecticut in the United States. This is the Mark Twain House. Now a National Historic Landmark, this Hartford residence was once home to author Samuel Clemens, who was also known as Mark Twain, and his family from 1874 to 1891. Now, Mark Twain penned some of the most well-known works, including The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. The author called these some of the happiest and most productive years of his life. However, after his daughter Susie died of meningitis in 1896, the Clemens family was too heartbroken to continue living in the house, and they sold it. Today, the home is maintained as a museum, and is said to be haunted by a lady in white. Well, I hope you guys like those five little spooky locations, and maybe one day you'll be interested enough or have the chance to visit these places and see if they really are haunted. Especially the Huska Castle. I mean, that one grabbed my attention right away. And I want to thank you guys again so much for joining me. Please remember, after 2 weeks, we'll be back with a new season of Demimond Paranormal. This will be season 6. I mean, it really is humbling that we've been doing these podcasts for about 2 years now, and it's grown so much, actually way more than I thought it would. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in each week for a new episode. I mean, I'm always surprised when I see a bunch of hits on my new episodes. It really does flatter me. And as always, I'm Tori from Demimond Paranormal, and I will see you again real soon. But until then, stay safe, stay spooky, be kind to one another, make good choices, and I will see you guys again, maybe in your dreams, maybe as a ghost, I don't know, but maybe probably since I'm still technically alive, maybe I'll come to you like in the Crucible style, I'll send my spirit, I'm joking of course, but anyway. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I will see you guys. Toodles!